Okay. So thank you very much, Peter. I would like to thank all the organizers of the program for the invitation. I had never been here before, and it's a great place, and I think it's a nice program for what I know. So, okay, so what I'd like to talk about, as Peter was saying, is about, a little bit about noise and order in a particular type of especially extended system, which is activator inhibitor media. So some of the collaborators I've been having in these last years in this type of problems are from my university, Roberto Vascones, José María Sancho and Francesc Sagués from the University of Barcelona, Alexei Zaikin and Lutz Szymanski-Geyer from Humboldt University, and Eckhard Ulner and Jürgen Kurz from the University of Potsdam. So let me first, before even telling you the outline of the talk, I would like to specify a little bit to explain some of the terms that I have in the title of the talk. First thing is that I would like to emphasize the type of systems that we're going to analyze. Basically, we were going to analyze activator inhibitor medium, which is a type of special extended dynamical system. So we will have a special and temporal degrees of freedom. We will study the effect of noise in this type of system. And by noise here, I mean random fluctuations in space and time in the parameters of the system. And the kind of order that I'm referring to, well, I should, this is prepared to do these kind of things. Okay. And the kind of order that I'm going to be discussing about is any type of macroscopic state which displays spatial organization. There are different types of things that I would call spatial order. For the first example, and I'm going to be talking about this for a little bit, are stationary patterns, such as convection rolls in Rayleigh-Venner cells. I would also consider some kind of spatial orders homogeneous states that arise, for instance, in spin systems, when you have a transition from paramagnetic to ferromagnetic phases. And basically, I will concentrate on another type of order, which is the one given by spatial temporal structures, such as, for instance, spiral waves, traveling waves in excitable media. Another thing that I would like to say before giving you the outline is the type of models that we are going to consider. We're going to consider field models. So we have a field here, which varies and depends on time and space. It has some deterministic force in F, and then it has some stochastic term here. And then this stochastic term is given by a spatial temporal noise, which we're going to consider to be Gaussian and white in time in principle. So the problem will be Markovian. But so this is the correlation. And so it's white in time. There are no correlations at different times, at different time instants. And then you have some correlation in space, which can be basically we're not going to analyze the effect of this type of correlation. But we can do this because all the mathematical treatment is independent of that. And finally, so when we say that we want to study order, basically these type of models are defined in such a way that when the field is equal to zero, this means that you are in a kind of disordered situation. For instance, in a magnetic system, this would mean that spins are randomly pointing up and down, so the average magnetization is zero. And when you have a transition to order, this means that the field becomes non-zero. So this is basically either depending on time or depending on space or. So this is the outline of what I wanted to talk about. As Peter said, I'm going to concentrate in excitable system or in systems with activator inhibitor dynamics. But first of all, I would like to, since I am here in this audience, I would like to make some overview of the work that has led to this kind of results. I would like to talk a little bit of noise-induced patterns, also noise-induced phase transitions very briefly, and then a brief overview of the different types of noise-induced cellular structures. And then I will concentrate on the type of things that I want to talk about, basically noise-induced transitions in this type of activator inhibitor media. I will show you that noise is able to induce a bistable activator inhibitor medium to behave as if it was excitable. And if it's excitable and then we introduce noise, it's going to become oscillatory. And you can also even go back. And if it's oscillatory, you can even make it excitable. So, well, you will see all the different examples in also the talk. Well, so maybe making a little bit of history, going back in time, maybe you can correct me because maybe you have more information here, but the first example that I found on noise-induced phase transitions was in 1981 by Alexander Mikhailov. And when I say noise-induced phase transitions, I mean what is the effect of noise in a system which depends on space and time. For instance, Alexander Mikhailov has studied this three-species system, which has some kind of Lotka-Volterra dynamics, which is given by these equations. And these variables here, N, N, and M, which corresponds to the concentrations of X, Y, and Z species, depend on space and time, because here you see, for instance, you have a diffusion. So this is a special, these are three coupled PDEs, if you want. There is only special coupling here, but you have a special distribution anyway. So this is, as far as I know, the first example where you introduce some kind of spatiotemporal noise in such a system. In particular, what he studied was the effect of having this Q parameter fluctuating. This Q parameter can be interpreted somehow as the food that you introduce into the ecosystem, if this is a system of three species. So there is some kind of some base amount of food introduced through this magnitude Q. And if this Q is constant, in the usual deterministic case, what you can see from analyzing this system is that there is extinction. One of the species goes to zero, okay, and the other ones go to some steady state. And what he showed in this paper already in 1981, more than 20 years ago, is that if you introduce fluctuations both in space and time in this quantity Q, there is a coexisting fixed point in which all three variables are non-zero, and this fixed point becomes stable. Okay, so noise is able to induce coexistence, and in the absence of noise, you don't have anything at all. So this is some kind of constructive effect of noise, which is unexpected.
This is infinitesimal noise?
No, not necessarily, but...
I don't quite understand. If you... you're saying... large, even, mm-hmm. would get extinction, but an infinitesimal variation of Q change the equations, there's no reason why the solutions shouldn't change.
Yeah, I would.
Maybe.
Yeah, no, I definitely, and please, you interrupt me anytime. So Eberhard or Peter told me that this is very informal, right. and I love it, so please interrupt me. Now, the thing is, I agree, so you have a finite DC level of Q, and for this final level of constant level of Q, in some particular, this is just an example. I will give more details later in the particular models I want to introduce. But the thing is, for instance, in this case, you have a constant value of Q, which is finite, and then for this constant value of Q, this is a steady state of the system. Now,
you get extinction.
Okay. Now you take Q and superimpose to this DC level a small fluctuation. Okay. I don't remember exactly in this particular paper. I'm sure he considered Gaussian fluctuations, and I'm sure it's only a percentage of the DC level of Q. So you are not really changing. It's zero mean. This is very important. The fluctuations have zero mean.
Right, but the magnitude.
The magnitude is not infinitesimal. It's small. I don't know what you mean. But depending on the model, you can make an analysis and you can make predictions of what the intensity of the noise needs to be. And usually this kind of effects, noise doesn't, the thing is that noise is not necessarily, doesn't need to be very large, because if it was very large, you're going to destroy everything already. If you have a Q which fluctuates hugely between the zero level and the DC level for which you have extinction, you have nothing left. So what I mean is that noise is small enough to produce a macroscopic effect. Which you will see, sometimes you can interpret it as a renormalization of the parameters of the system, and sometimes you cannot. This depends. This is the first example. I was telling you because this is something that happened in the early 80s, and for a decade or so, not so many people worked in PDEs with noise, as far as I know. Maybe you can correct me if this is not correct. And then we started studying this in the early 90s, the situation of Rayleigh-Benard convection, which all of you know, so I'm not going to introduce this. And this is, of course, described by the Swift-Rosenberg equation. You have a transition from conduction to convection. This is what I would call order roles, and this is a disorder. These things are due to thermal fluctuations because we are considering internal noise here. And you have a transition well defined by an order parameter, which is this J, which is the amount of heat which is transmitted from bottom to top due to convection. So when this J is zero, there is no convection, only conduction and thermal fluctuations. And when J is non-zero, you have a convection on this row. So this is a typical pattern-forming system. And now the control parameter is this R here, which is the same as this gamma. I'm sorry for the change, but it's some kind of... So the thing is that this R is related to the temperature difference between the plates. And then since this is a standard system, we don't necessarily need to assume that this R is constant everywhere. So why don't we assume that you have some fluctuations in time and space all through the system? So this means that now I'm going to consider that R is going to be, I'm going to superimpose to this control parameter this noise, okay? I'm going to give details, well, I already gave details of the noise to you, so it's a noise with zero mean, it's Gaussianly distributed. I'm going to assume it's white in time, and I could have some correlations in space. I don't care about this at this moment. And the thing, what happens is that as soon as you introduce noise, a finite amount of noise, okay, it may be of the same order of R, but it's not larger, and it's not destroying anything, as you will see. A finite amount of noise is going to shift the transition towards the left, and this means that you're going to have you can have patterns in situations where you wouldn't have in the absence of noise. Maybe you want to call, you don't want to call these noise-induced patterns because you are merely shifting a bifurcation. But since this is a talk and not a paper, I am free to use some loosely words. So I'm going to call these noise-induced patterns. And these are examples of two types of patterns induced by noise. This, in this case here, I'm adding a second-order nonlinearity, which I haven't written here, which allows me these hexagonal patterns. But you can see that noise is not zero, it's not infinitesimal, but it's not too large, because if it was very large, you will destroy everything. So you still have order, and the nice thing is that you need to add noise to the system to have disordered states.
But a very small noise then shifts the transition a little.
Yeah. The shift is proportional to the amount of noise. Yeah, I agree. So this was the first example, as far as I know, in this area. Then there were other examples which maybe more trivial. Okay, but starting at this point, other examples were obtained. For instance, you could consider this paper experimental realization, somewhat experimental realization of what I told you earlier. It's not the same system. It's a photosensitive chemical reaction. It's similar to the Belousov-Zhabotinsky reaction, it's a CDMA reaction. And the nice thing about this is that you can act on the reaction by light because the reaction is photosensitive. This type of reaction, if you put this on a gel, it displays a Turing bifurcation. For instance, here you measure what's happening, and then you can feedback, or you can generate some other type of noisy pattern and project it. And then here in this way you are introducing some kind of very well-defined noise to the system. In this figure, for instance, here you can see how when there is no illumination, when there is a large amount of illumination, you have a homogeneous state, and when the illumination goes down in this area here, you have some, or here for instance, you have some Turing instability in the static pattern. So this figure here illustrates the deterministic bifurcation, if you want, into different areas. And what I want to emphasize now is that what you can do is change this and introduce a real noise with these patches, which are smaller than this size, than these spots here. And this is a quench noise, so it's not exactly the same experimental situation that I was assuming earlier, because in that case noise was also in time. This is a frozen noise, it's only on space. But even in this case you can already see that when you introduce noise, and I have to say that the average illumination of this in this square corresponds to the white situation here more or less. So this means that for the average illumination here you would have no pattern, but due to this control parameter, you have pattern formation, which is not mimicking, I have to say. This is not mimicking the pattern here of dark and bright spots, because these are much smaller. So you can interpret this, well, maybe, I mean, it's just a matter of discussion, but you could interpret this as noise inducing some Turing pattern formation. And here, for instance, these investigators developed this phase diagram, which you can see that this is a transition in the absence of noise. For a large illumination, you have no pattern. For a small illumination, you have Turing pattern. And when you increase noise intensity, the Turing area, the order region, increases. So somehow noise is enhancing order in the system.
But the various points indicate that the non-reproducibility.
Well, I don't know. This I don't know. I cannot tell you. I don't remember. I have to look at the paper. Maybe just a measure of experimental error. Yeah.
Not error. This absence of reproducibility.
Probably what they. Let me see. Probably what they did was fix a value of noise and increase illumination. And then
I think it's just repeating the experiment.
No, because you are increasing noise. So it's a phase. So you have here two control parameters. Sorry?
Each one experiment.
Different noise. Yeah, of course. The theory could give you this line, but what they see experimentally, and probably this is simply due to the discreteness of their ability to increase illumination. So what they fix noise, and they increase in illumination in steps, pom, 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 and then here, oh, here I see a change.
Wait. Each point is not an experiment.
It's a threshold.
Is a threshold.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they must have repeated the experiment and gotten thresholds at different points.
That's no, but the experiment, for instance, this point and this point are not identical because they have different noise levels. It's not the same experiment. You know what I mean?
I think the question is whether you could do the other experiment where you keep the aggressive illumination constant and then you change the noise.
I think.
Whichever it is.
I don't know. Yeah, I agree. Okay. So this is a measure of their experimental limitation. I know or not?
Or the limitation of the phenomenon, how reproducible the phenomenon is.
I don't know. I agree with you that the opposite experiment in which you fix illumination and increase intensity would be nice to. You will always have some error in the determination of the threshold.
What he's saying is you go in discrete steps over here. And then in this region, all the points that would be on here and here get accumulated on the screen because the experimental resolution was too small.
If you were able to tune illumination much more finely, probably, so you, they jumped here. And I don't know why, because maybe this is limitation of the CCD of the projector or something. I don't know. I don't know. I cannot defend these people, at least as far as I can. But well, let's continue. Now the question is, how can this thing happen? So first of all, what I would like to go back to a very simple situation in which I don't have a spatial dynamics. This is already very well known, very old. Peter, it will be bored at this point already. But so this is a very simple ODE here with a deterministic forcing and an internal noise. And of course, what's going to happen is that due to this noise, well, you can define, of course, a deterministic potential, which is this one here. And due to the noise, the system is going to wiggle around the minimum. So the probability distribution of X is going to be like this. And the width of this Gaussian, the width of this distribution is going to depend on the intensity of the noise. This is very well known. Now, what happens if you introduce noise in a different way? For instance, what happens if the noise is something like this, in which now it's going to be multiplied by a function of the state of the system? Well, now you can derive corresponding Fokker-Planck equation for this stochastic differential equation, and you can solve this Fokker-Planck equation in the steady state. And you can see that the system in steady state behaves as if it was moving in a stochastic potential, which is like this. You can see this analytically. I'm not going to enter into this detail because this is not what I'm interested in here today. But the important thing is that a stochastic potential appears, which is something, it could be something like this. The important thing is that you see here a function of G, a function of X, which changes the numerator and basically the numerator of this function. So now you could have, for given values of F and G, a potential which is instead of monostable, bistable. And when this happens, then the probability distribution function, instead of having one peak, it has two peaks. And this is a qualitative change. This is what people call some time ago noise-induced transitions. This is very well known already, so I'm not going to continue. Now the thing is, what happens if you have a standard system? This is what I want to continue to talk about. Now, instead of having an ODE, I have a PDE with a deterministic function. I have, again, my multiplicative noise. I call it multiplicative. Everybody calls it multiplicative because it's multiplying the state of the system. You have diffusion, for instance, to begin with. You have some internal noise. This internal noise you will assume to be white in time space. The external noise can be colored in space, but I'm assuming white in time. Now, there are different ways where noise can induce a transition. It's not analogous, but a transition in the system. One way is what it's called a short-time dynamical instability. What's happening here, for instance, there are many ways of analyzing this, but a simple way is, let's see how the local evolution is in average. So I'm going to forget about the Laplacian, because I'm studying local evolution, and I'm going to make the average of this equation, and this average is this thing here. And now I'm going to assume that I'm at short times, and I'm going to study the stability of the zero phase, so phi is small. So if phi is small, I can make the approximation that this average of f is f of the average. And now what happens with this average? And this is the important thing. This average term here, since the noise is multiplicative, you need to compute it. You need to specify an interpretation of the stochastic integrals of this equation. So this is not a relevant point at this. I just wanted to let you know that there are different ways of doing the calculation, and I'm using the Satonovich interpretation here, for those of you who know it. For those of you who don't, maybe we can discuss about this later. So in the Satonovich interpretation, you can compute this average, and this average happens to be proportional to the intensity of the noise. You can assume it's something like this. And then, so this means that the average field behaves as moving due to an effective force, which is this one, Okay, so this is the systematic contribution of this noise, which has zero mean, and in spite of having zero mean, you have a systematic contribution. And then you have this effective force here. And the important thing, it's very interesting, because if you look closely at this effective force, it's very similar to the stochastic potential that you have here, but with this numerator. But there is a plus instead of this minus. So it seems that the systems that display a phase transition in a standard situation are different from the ones that display a noise-induced transition in the zero-dimensional situation. But anyway, the thing is that you can pick F and G in such a way that the noise is going to destabilize the zero state. So this means that noise is going to make unstable the disordered situation. And this is a very well-known example of Van den Broek, Parolin, and Toral from 1994. This is the particular choices of F and G that they made. And in this case, the effective forcing is something like this. And this means that, as you can see, in the absence of noise, phi equals zero would be stable. But due to noise, phi equals zero can become unstable. In this particular approximation, the transition appears at 1/2. C0 is the correlation at zero space, so it's proportional to the noise intensity. And this is what they observe from numerical simulations, a real phase transition induced by noise, because now the control parameter is the intensity of the noise. The sigma square is proportional to this C0 here. And when you increase the intensity of the noise, the system displays a transition from disorder to order. And of course, if noise is very large, it goes back to disorder. Okay? And this is a phase transition. In a statistical mechanics sense, you can compute here critical exponents. This transition happens to be of the two-dimensional Ising model class, universality class, even though this is a non-equilibrium system. But anyway, this is different from, you could say, oh, this is already what happened in the ODE case, because the ODE case is like a Landau model, so it's like a phase transition model. But the ODE case is a mean field model. So you will only be able to obtain mean field critical exponents here. This is not mean field. This is a real phase transition with a well-defined and well-known universality class.
This at average x is average phi.
Yeah, I'm sorry for
and
the.
There is a. There is a sharp.
Yeah.
Transition.
Yeah. There is a sharp transition from a disordered situation in which the field is zero, the mean field is zero, to a situation in which you have order. So it's similar to the paraferromagnetic phase transition. This is a non-equilibrium system.
At a non-zero sigma?
Yeah. So this is the relevant thing, that when you increase noise, you order the system.
It doesn't look very sharp.
Yeah.
Because it's not very big.
And that. In other words, did they look at whether it's a, I mean, we know that multiplicative noise allows in the zero dimensional case, there is a sharp transition. In other words, there's a threshold of noise below which it's strictly zero and above which it is strictly non-zero.
Mm-hmm.
But, so that already, whereas additive noise just rounds the transition.
Yeah.
Now here, it's somewhat non-trivial because it's an infinite system. There's an infinite number of degrees of freedom. So as Mike says, you'd expect that only to appear, the sharp transition only to appear for an infinite system. And so you can do finite size scaling and all that.
Well, this is what we are doing, yeah.
Huh?
This is what we are doing, finite size scaling. Well, they did finite size scaling here, and you can see how the generalized, you can define a generalized susceptibility,
right.
And this goes to infinity as you increase
right.
L, so you can do a finite size scaling
right.
analysis.
That's
computer.
Why you get a change of exponent.
Yeah, and it's a clear, well-defined phase transition, and it's not the only example. Okay, so this is, of course, the only problem here is that there are no experimental verification of this particular phenomenon, which is very interesting from a fundamental point of view, but there is no money, I guess, and for people to spend time.
There wasn't any, the story, there wasn't any criticality.
In the zero dimensional case, the problem
really
again.
Sharp transition.
But there's no criticality.
No, because.
The system is ergodic, so the system is jumping all over. For instance, to begin with, here you can define a mean field, and the mean field goes to a zero value because there is an ergodicity breaking. And you don't have this in zero. So this is the relevant thing about this type of models. But this is already very well. If you are happy, we can spend a little bit because This was an overview, but well, hopefully I will have time. Yeah, I will have time to continue with the study. So, of course, I want to do some kind of. I'm citing other people's work, but I should cite also our work. So there are others. So for 6 years, it was believed that this was the only mechanism of noise-induced phase transitions. This mechanism of short-time instability. By the way, the short-time instability, what happens is that it gets frozen by the special coupling. Okay, this is how this instability appears only at short times. You may wonder, but of course, at long times, what happens? Of course, in 0D, at long times, this instability is erased because of the additive, so the system is ergodic, which is what I was telling you. But since you have the coupling is freezing this instability. And it was believed that this was the only type of noise-induced phase transition. It was believed then that the systems that display this, if you remove the coupling, you will not have a phase transition in the corresponding ODE. But this is not the case. Things are much more robust and much more general. We have found other mechanisms of noise-induced phase transition. You can call this an entropy-driven instability. In this case, for instance, we define this relaxational model again. This is the deterministic forcing. This is the noise again, multiplicative, and we introduce here some mobility, field-dependent mobility, in such a way that the fluctuation dissipation theorem holds. So, in other words, you can compute exactly the free energy potential of this system. I'm not going to enter into this because I only want to show you the phenomenology. And the phenomenology is the following: since you can compute the effective force in this case, the same way we did before. And there is a minus here, there is a minus here. The system is not becoming unstable at short times. So it's not the same kind of mechanism as before. By the way, I'm assuming this type of mobility, okay? A mobility with a Lorentzian profile. On the other hand, you can compute the local stochastic potential, as I told you in the first transparencies. And you can see that as noise increases locally, the potential goes from monostable to bistable. So it's a similar situation. If you remove noise from here, the system would have a noise-induced transition like ODEs. But now what we have is now we have coupling here. We don't have a short-time instability, but if we couple the systems by this diffusion, what you see is again you can find a phase transition. You can find it, and you can compute exactly the free energy for all values of noise because of the way that we pick the mobility. Here you can see here the phase transition with a finite size scaling. This is the noise intensity. I'm changing notation all the time. I hope you forgive me. I'm sorry for that. This is noise intensity now. This is now the average value of the field, and this is again the sensitivity. You can see a very clear finite size effect towards a divergence. So you can compute again the critical exponents. This also belongs to the two-dimensional Ising universality class. And now how can you interpret this if there is no short-time instability, no freezing of this instability, nothing like this? So you can interpret this very easily. So it's a balance between the deterministic relaxation due to the potential. The potential is monostable in the absence of noise, so the system tends to zero. But then you have a noise which is multiplied by the square root of this mobility, which is a Lorentzian. So this means that noise is larger at zero. So you have noise large here, which tends to drive the system away. And on the other hand, when you go away, you have a deterministic relaxation. So there is a balance, and you can get a non-zero mean field for a certain value of the noise. So this is a mechanism, and this is similar somewhat of entropy-driven phase transitions in polymer fluids and this kind of thing, but we didn't enter into this. Okay.
Doesn't this system have a Lyapunov potential?
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
So it's really an equilibrium system. It's not a non-equilibrium system.
Let me see. You can compute the free energy potential, a free energy
there's
potential.
There's an exact free energy
to
which the system relaxes at long time.
Yeah.
So it's not different from equilibrium.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, if you want.
It's not fundamentally a non-equilibrium system.
Yeah. Well, because of the our choice of the mobility.
Yeah. This is equilibrium. This is your model in the A, B, C, D, E, K, etc. I mean, I don't know which one it is. It's probably...
Well, it's not conserved, so it's similar to model A.
It is in the university class of model A, I think.
It is. But the noise here is non-trivial because it's... So in model A, to begin with, noise is simply additive.
No. It's a universality class.
Okay.
We happen to choose the simplest member of that class, this is another member of that class.
Okay.
I think this is equilibrium.
Okay.
This isn't non-equilibrium.
Isn't there a transformation make that noise energy?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
No. When you go out of equilibrium, when you violate the detail balance, what happens?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, that's what makes me think that it's not the same problem, because I think if you go to a microscopic version of the system and try to, the detail balance is not whole.
Doesn't matter.
Well, it's just a matter of terminology then.
No.
How do you define equilibrium? We shouldn't bring this topic here today, but...
No. You're only looking at the equilibrium properties. You're looking at the steady state
at
all times.
I agree.
That is defined by a potential.
Okay.
All you need to do equilibrium, phase transition, statistical mechanics, and the approach to equilibrium, the dynamical scaling and all that, is exactly model A. And you've only, of course, if you look at real dynamics, which is not the steady state at long times, then there is no universality in there, but that's not what you're looking at. You're only looking at the long time steady state property.
I agree completely.
And that is model A.
I agree completely with you. Yeah, but it's a dynamical model, okay? So I'm studying right now the steady state behavior, but it's a dynamical problem.
Well, okay.
No, but I agree. But well, the thing is that maybe you can interpret this in the following way. These kind of things are not so mysterious in this sense. And the nice thing is that you can really understand why this is happening. So you can maybe put this in perspective, comparing it with the previous situation. Okay. But I agree. Now I agree with. So this is a question. It's just a matter whether you're looking at the steady state or not. I agree. Okay. Well, I knew this was going to be interesting. But this is only a first step, because as Peter said, I wanted to study excitable media, or whatever you want to call it. So let me very briefly remind you what are the dynamics of excitables, or the characteristics of excitable systems. I can define it in three characteristics. You have a single steady state, a stable steady state, which is called the rest state. And then the system, when you perturb it beyond a certain threshold, you're going to excite some response, typically in the form of a pulse. And the pulse is usually, the shape of the pulse is independent of the perturbation, as long as the perturbation is above threshold. This is a typical characteristics of excitable system. Also, you usually have a refractory time. You cannot excite a pulse very close to the first one, because the system is not going to respond. It needs some time to go to a rest state again. This is a typical experimental observation. I should write down here. I don't do this, and I should. This is an experimental paper by Strong and co-workers, a PRL paper. This is a time trace measured from the neural system, from the visual system of a fly. And here you can see a typical excitable behavior dynamics. Now, why are we interested in the case of special extended systems? This is a program in pattern formation. We are interested, of course, because if you have a specially extended system of this type of elements, you have a possibility to introduce a perturbation, which is not the typical ones. Typical ways to introduce perturbation is due to an external stimulus. For instance, in this case, it would be some sensation that comes into the neuron. Or you can also use noise, which is something that is also interesting for us. But you can also use a neighbor. So if you have an array of these elements, a neighbor is going to introduce the perturbation that's going to kick the system. And this leads to propagation. You can have very nice patterns, spiral waves, propagating fronts, and these are found everywhere over the place. Peter is still bored because he knows all about this. And in fact, I'm going to cite him now. Once you have this type of spatiotemporal systems, the noise is able to make all kinds of interesting stuff here. And this is, as far as I know, the first example of this problem. It was a cellular automaton model of an excitable system like this. So you can implement these three rules. You can make an array of these elements. You can introduce some noise. And then you can see, this is a model, and you can see here that they can tune the model in such a way that if noise is very small, an initial perturbation is going to die. And well, we hear if you wait long enough, this is going to die or escape over there. Boundary. Now you add a little bit of noise, this is time, so now you add a little bit of noise and a perturbation, these are probably different instances, probably Peter can give you much more details about this, but if you add a perturbation, this front is going to live longer until here it dies simply because it leaves the system, and for an optimal amount of noise, the spiral wave is there for a long time. Of course, if you add too much noise, you're going to destroy everything. So you could say that there is an optimal amount of noise for which the system is more structured in space and time, because you have this very well-defined spatiotemporal behavior They call this spatiotemporal stochastic resonance, which I would like to discuss with him about the name, because I don't agree with that name, but that's the name they gave him. Okay, and then there is also experimental verification, and I think there is a symposium next week on glial cells. This is what Peter told me. So this is an experimental example of a noise-induced wave in a network of such glial cells, and this was published also in 1998. And here, what they do experimentally is that they can control, if I am right, they can control the amount of noise by means of the neurotransmitter that you are adding to the system. So if you add a low level of neurotransmitter, you can assume that there is a low level of noise, and nothing happens in this culture. If you add some noise, then the noise is able to excite some calcium waves, and these calcium waves are going to live there for a long while, for a certainly long time, for a somewhat long time. And this you could interpret as noise-induced structures in the system. Well, this is an initial example of this type of behavior. I don't know if there are more results in this type of systems in this sense. Okay, no, I can imagine. I was asking if there was more results in the context of noise. But as you can see, noise can do very interesting things. Something that we did also approximately at the same time is that we were just playing around with a Fitzhugh-Nagumo model. I will describe this type of models later. And what we saw is that in the noise was able to induce some very nice thing. For instance, in the absence of noise, this type of system, if it's an excitable regime, exhibits a spiral wave. And this spiral wave is extremely robust. The only way to kill this guy is that the core of the spiral goes out of the system. Otherwise, you cannot kill this guy with a standard Fitzhugh-Nagumo dynamics, and I will explain what this is later. But the key thing is that spiral things are very robust in standard models of excitable system. A lot of people have been trying to break this system, these spirals, in order to mimic what happens in the transition from tachycardia to ventricular fibrillation, and there were a lot of models and people studied, oh, we have to modify the dynamics in such a way that blah, blah, and so they invented very, very important, very, very sophisticated deterministic mechanisms to induce spiral breakup and spiral defect chaos. And the thing is that, this is nice, this is not maybe very relevant, but it's nice. If you add noise in a very simple way, you can induce breakup by making the system to behave bistable locally. So for instance here, due to noise, this thing here is going to survive for a while before the system has gone past it, and then it's going to induce a breakup. And once it's
worth for the people to have so many spirals on the arc.
Yeah.
Oh, it's worth.
It's worth.
It's no, worth. It's bad.
It's bad. Okay. The spiral is bad. The spiral breakup is bad.
Okay.
So, at least
going to cure the people with noise.
No, I'm going to kill. I'm not the curing type. I'm the killing type. I'm sorry for that. Of course, you cannot go to NIH to apply money for this. This went lower. So that's why I haven't published more papers in this direction.
We don't want you to have this. Right.
But what we wanted to point out is that there are very interesting ways in which noise can introduce non-trivial effects. And I'm telling you, you could say, oh, you are adding noise here. If you add noise which is large enough to produce this effect, one could expect that noise would destroy everything. But this is some kind of coherent state. So spiral defect chaos which persists there indefinitely. And it's simply due to noise. So you don't need any complicated deterministic dynamics in the system. You need only to consider that one of the deterministic parameters is fluctuating in space and time. And given the complexity of neural systems, and this is something that I will tell you in a few minutes, you will never know, I mean, ion channel noise where it appears in a Fitzhugh-Nagumo description, okay? So, and people use usually Fitzhugh-Nagumo models and put some additive noise and nothing happens, but some terrible things, some interesting things can happen, non-trivial things can happen if you add noise in a very well-defined way. Well, this was my overview, and I only have 15 minutes left, but I will manage it, okay? So let me tell you how we describe this, and this is all very, very well known, so I can go very quickly over it. So this is, I'm going to consider activator-inhibitor type of models, two species, U and V, a couple in principle, both of them in space by means of this diffusion. You define F and G in such a way that U is really an activator and V is really an inhibitor. And besides, you choose the time scale in such a way that U is much faster than V. Well, you already know this. So then you have the typical null clients of the system. These are given the choices of F and G. These are the typical situations that one consider. And where the null clients cross tells you how many steady states have in your system. So you can have the main point here is that you can have different local dynamics. For instance, if the crossings are here, then you have a bistable situation. Okay? So you have a bistable system. And in the case of spatial coupling, this type of system is only able to propagate in principle kinks or fronts. So the system will be here, it will be hit by some neighbor, it will jump, and it will stay here. So there will be a front going from here to here and nothing else. But if the crossings are only restricted to this point, this is a typical excitable situation, and then you have a pulse. And if you have a standard system, this system is going to be able to propagate a pulse, because a neighbor is going to excite a guide here, and then it's going all the way, and it's going back. So it will be able to be excited again. So it's a very different situation from a spatiotemporal point of view. And you can also have a crossing here, and this point is unstable, so this is an oscillatory situation. In this case, you can have pulse trains propagating through the system. So the important thing is that these models exhibit all this type of interesting dynamics. And what I'm going to show you now is that we are going to play with toy models, but they're not so artificial somehow. And I'm going to show you that noise is going to be able to induce transitions between these three states. Okay? So first of all, I'm going to show you that noise is able to make a system which is bistable behave as if it was excitable, a system which is excitable behave as if it was oscillatory, and even going back, depending on how you introduce noise in the system. First example, and these are some experiments. Well, if you want to call electronic circuit experiments as experiments, that's okay. These are experimental realizations. We really build this kind of stuff with some similar types, circuits similar to Chua circuits. We built an array of them. You can control so this is one of the circuits. You can control the dynamics of this circuit by playing on the power supply of this operational amplifier, and you can make the system behave or bistable or excitable, so you have a transition in the deterministic sense by controlling this power supply. But you can also make the system behave in a bistable situation and make it and add it some noise and see what happens. Okay? And this noise is multiplicative, as you will see. It appears it's coupled to the state of the system. So what's going to happen, and what the experiment shows, is that for a small noise, the system is bistable. By the way, this is the response.
Your system is a set of these
32.
32,
yeah.
And they're coupled in a way which mimics the diffusive coupling?
Yeah, so you have resistances here. These resistances are the ones that couple two neighbors. So you have local coupling mimicking diffusive coupling.
And what are the boundary conditions?
Free. Free. So the system, first of all, the first circuit is subject to some input, which is a spike train. So you are submitting the first circuit to a train of spikes in this voltage. Okay, so you are making some input here in this voltage. No, sorry, in this voltage here, some train of spikes. So this is one. So the first circuit is forced, and the last circuit you just measure. So there are no periodic boundary conditions or anything like this here. You could do it.
And those are for a single circuit.
And those are for these null Klein plots are for a single circuit. But all of them, so what I'm doing, what we are doing here is all of them are set up in a situation in which the system is bistable. So that, and this is what the last circuit receives. So this is all after the signal has been transmitted. So we are measuring at the last circuit. And this is the response of all the system after the wave has propagated. And I'm insisting that what we are introducing here is a train of pulses. And at every pulse, the system jumps from one state to the other. And this is because the system is bistable. This is trivial. Okay. And what you are propagating is just a pulse. A front. So all the circuits.
What you call the king?
Yeah. What I call a king. I'm using language. This is not a publication, so I'm kind of loose at this point. Now I introduce noise. Okay, and what noise does is simply noise provides a mechanism for resetting this fixed point, so that the system, when the neuron receives the signal, it doesn't stay here anymore. So the system behaves effectively as if it was excitable. So if you increase noise, you see what this happens. Okay, the system is like, as if it was an excitable system. This is just, again, a very simple system. Maybe it's not very relevant again, but one could think, and this we learned of this kind of work before, after we made our experiments, and it was very interesting. There is this paper here in Journal of Physiology with this powerful title: "All thalamocortical neurons possess bistability properties." Basically, all thalamocortical neurons, and this is an experimental measurement of their neurons. And we didn't prepare the figure, and it's very similar in the sense that these are their neurons, and these are the inputs to the neurons, and the single neuron goes from one state to the other. Okay, so there is a whole bunch of neurons which have bistable properties. Now the thing is, can these neurons participate in propagation of action potentials? Because if the neuron is bistable, in principle, how can we expect an action potential to propagate if it has no resetting mechanism? Okay, it doesn't go back to one state, it goes to the other one. And this is what we, by the way, have in our in our circuit, and what we just showed in the previous transparency is that if you add noise in a certain way to our electronic neuron, if you want, you are able to make the system propagate spikes and propagate action potential.
So why well, it not propagate? I mean, instead of a pulse, it would be a front going over the axon.
Yeah, yeah, and what, and if you... Yeah, but is this how, well, maybe you know much more than me about this. Is this a typical way that neurons operate? How do you reset this neuron then for the next signal?
I don't know.
Maybe it's not relevant, okay? Maybe it's not relevant, right? But I'm just throwing this away. So this is a program on biology as well. So, well, this is just an experiment. This is a much more interesting experiment, which I didn't do, so I can say it's interesting. And there they saw, and this is a photosensitive Velousov-Sabotinsky reaction, similar to the setup that I showed you earlier. And here what they saw is that introducing noise into the system, you can turn a normal excitable system into a pacemaker. For instance, this is the typical situation of the Velousov-Sabotinsky cell. In the absence of noise, you perturb at the center and a single pulse propagates. It's very nice because there is no noise. And what they saw is that if they add noise to the illumination pattern, and this is spatiotemporal noise, not frozen noise, you can do this very easily because you have a projector system there. So for a certain amount of noise, you're going to induce some oscillatory-like behavior. Okay, so you have a pulse train here.
You only apply noise?
The only thing we do, well, the only thing they did was superimposed to this average illumination for which the system is excitable, a small amount of zero mean noise.
And then, in how space. Did they excite the...
They only excite, they don't need to excite it even, well, no, that's not true. You should excite, I'm sorry. You should excite once.
Yeah. Well,
but once you are excited, then you give the system the whole pattern of refractoriness that allows this very nice situation. You can also...
You give it a single pulse and then it generates...
Yeah, it generates the pacemaker, yeah.
Or this...
Yeah. So noise is not destroying everything. It's not so large that everything is destroyed. It's acting in a very coherent way. And it's making the system to behave. So it's inducing a transition between excitable and to oscillatory dynamics. What we did later was studying this theoretically. And we can explain all of these transitions theoretically, from bistable to excitable and from excitable to oscillatory. So here, this is the type of model that we use. It's the so-called Barclay model. This model is a model which was derived for its computational convenience in spatiotemporal systems. But people have, and particularly Peter, have used this model to describe Velousov-Sabotinsky reaction in a quite successful way. So it's a very, I mean, it's approximate, but it's quite, I would say it's quite adequate or quite approximate, or quite good to describe this thing. And the important thing is that illumination in this model enters into this parameter B. Okay, this is where illumination enters. And in particular, this parameter B can induce a transition by itself in the absence of noise. Again, I'm only shifting transitions here. For instance, if B is small, the system is bistable. If B is, here you see the nuclides. The system has a very strange type, it's a piecewise linear nuclides because it's for its computational convenience. But you can always control B in such a way that the intersections are here and here, the system is bistable. And if B is large, you only have one intersection here. These extra intersections are either unstable or the system doesn't get to them. So they are not relevant in the case of special coupling. So the system can be either bistable or excitable. Here you have typical behavior of a one-dimensional system. This is one dimension, and this time you excite the left corner and you let the system go. If the system is bistable, you have a kink, if you allow me, or a front propagating from left to right. If the system is excitable, you have a very nice spike, typical. Now, this is a typical transition. Now I'm going to do the following. I'm going to fix the system here and add some noise and see how noise induces a transition, a well-defined transition from bistability to excitability. So what I do is now, since this is the illumination in the case of the Velousov-Sabotinsky reaction, I'm going to assume that this parameter fluctuates in space and time, zero mean and a certain DC level, again, this type of correlation. And again, I can perform the same kind of analysis I did before. You can try to compute what is the systematic contribution of the multiplicative noise term, which is due to a fluctuating B. This is the term, and you can compute the mean in the Stratonovich interpretation. This is the value of the mean. And if you plug this back into here, you can obtain a renormalized model. This contribution here, plugged into here, redefines the parameters A, B, and epsilon in such a way. I'm not going to enter into details here. This is just telling you that you have a renormalization of this parameter. And when you have B and A in particular, then you can analyze how noise here affects the transitions. Yes.
This is an approximation.
It's an approximation. So you are
what the approximation is.
Yeah, that's true. So what we are doing is the following. Somehow this model is effective in the sense that, first of all, it's local. We have neglected here the diffusion. This effect will also happen in zero-dimensional systems at this point. So the effect is local. And the next thing is that this is not well written, because this is not U. This would be the dynamics of the mean of U. Okay, if you want to interpret it like this, or you can also interpret it as that you are making a small noise expansion, and at first noise in noise intensity, at first order in the intensity of the noise, the contribution of this multiplicative noise is just the systematic contribution. So you only keep the first order in noise intensity. That's true, and I should say this. Yeah, that's true. I'm trying to be very broad, and that's why I'm not very rigorous. But that's what's happening here. The important thing is that since you have redefined the deterministic parameters due to noise, then you can compute a phase diagram, and this is the phase diagram. Again, here I'm plotting a deterministic parameter, and here I'm plotting noise intensity. This is noise intensity. I'm calling it now Z0, which is my usual name. I have been calling it epsilon and sigma square earlier, and this is a deterministic parameter. In the absence of noise, you have the transition I told you earlier. Small b system is bistable, large b system is excitable. And according to the renormalization that I told you earlier, you can see that as you increase noise, the bistable region decreases, and you have excitable regions here, 1 and 2, which corresponds to the one of the two steady states being stable or the other one. So they are asymmetrical excitable regions. And you even have oscillatory region. So for instance, and now I'm showing you, so this is the approximation, this is the approximate phase diagram, according to the approximate analysis I told you, and now I'm going to show you what the system looks like from numerical simulation in these three points. In the absence of noise, the system is bistable, only a front propagates. Now you increase noise, the system behaves as if it was excitable, and the interesting thing is that if you increase noise even more, the system behaves as if it was oscillatory. Now you will tell me, and I agree with you, the initial conditions here and here are different, okay, I don't want to mislead you. Here the initial conditions are, I'm exciting the left neuron, if you want, or the left point in the one-dimensional system. And here I could have done the same thing and trying to reproduce the experiment, this chemical experiment, but we just leave the system starting from random initial conditions. And the nice thing is that the system self-organizes. It's a very robust oscillatory behavior, because you start from initial conditions and the system displays synchronized oscillations. So it's really, I mean, our analysis is really mimicking, and these transitions are very well defined, so you can compute, and you really see that the analysis is really, the approximation is quite good, okay? These are three different points, but, well, this transition is not as well defined, so the simulations are not so clearly telling you what is the real position of the transition.
What you're plotting is this approximate theory.
Yeah, I'm just plotting the number and type of fixed points for the values of B and C.
That's well defined.
Yeah,
these
are well defined. But of course, if you now introduce your simulations, for instance, in simulations sometimes it's difficult. I have to admit, I have to give you my limitations. In simulations, it's difficult to decide whether the system is excitable or oscillatory. So, I mean, I have to tell you that the transition in this one is not so much well defined. Whereas this one is quite well defined. So. Up to 1% or so, you can go in your plug it in your simulation, and really, what the analysis tells you, it's hold, okay?
So the question: for these oscillations, they are all synchronized, the whole thing turned on off.
Yeah.
Now, in these experiments, you showed that you have the wave.
Yeah.
That's not the case.
Well, this is just, I prepared the figure just in this way, but in that case, it depends, because I'm telling you, in that case, what I was doing is I was exciting only the left-hand side site.
Oh, I see.
And here I'm just starting from everywhere. So it depends, and also the experiment. They prepare the experiment in that way. I'm preparing my numerical simulation in my way, but you could probably reproduce the same thinking. Okay? So you probably could just excite here and then see a pulse train. In fact, I did it also, of course. But I prepared only this figure. So it depends on the initial condition.
Phase diffusion because noise for large system?
Yeah. Well, you mean in the oscillatory situation?
Yeah,
we haven't analyzed this, and this is the problem. Is that we should be a little bit more careful in analyzing, for instance, phase diffusion in this case.
The phase should diffuse, and then you can even get dislocation.
Yeah, probably. Well, you can see. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But well, you will. I mean, if you have an oscillatory system, depending.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, this is. Well, I mean.
asymptotically in time.
Space and time, yeah. But if you take, you know, take infinite space and let it go, it rots.
That's a very interesting point. I don't know. I mean, we haven't done this, which is what I mean. Let's answer about this. Okay. So you can see. I mean, another. And I'm almost out of time. But another thing is that once you have your normalized parameters, these feature Nagumo type of models are very well defined. You can compute the shape of the pulse, the width, the velocity. You can compute all types of properties. So another way of trying to convince you that noise is not doing something very trivial, it's really shifting or changing the deterministic dynamics, is you compute the effective properties of the pulses, or the pulses of the effect, or the properties of the effective pulses induced by noise as given by the approximation. And these are the properties as measured in these simulations, and you see very good agreement. This means that really the system is behaving effectively as if it was in this deterministic situation for this value of noise. And you see the transition. Well, the transitions here, of course, are not well defined, because this transition, I mean, you can always have pulses in all three states, and you can always find the speed and width. So that's why you have it all over the place. But these are the transitions points that I did derive earlier. What I wanted to show you in this figure is that really the system is behaving effectively if it's, you change just change the deterministic parameters in an effective way. Okay, so we have seen a transition from bistable to excitable and from excitable to oscillatory. I have only one thing left, which is showing you that noise can even go back. So if you change the properties of the noise, and this is a toy model that we have studied, you can even induce a transition from oscillatory to excitable. And this is more non-trivial. I don't know. If you give me 4 minutes, yeah. I can finish. And is this okay? I don't want to. Okay, now let's think about the following. This is a completely artificial model so far. Okay, it's just a toy model if you want. And this is, the model is defined as follows. First of all, let's begin by considering global coupling. You will see that later that this is not important. So we have global coupling. We have Fitzu Nagumo oscillators, and we define the dynamics in the following way. The inhibitor has this normal dynamics. Now the noise. Don't ask me why. I mean, we were just playing around looking for the effect that we wanted at this point. Okay, but maybe we can convince you that this is really important. Noise here enters at this point. Okay, noise is multiplied to the state of the inhibitor in the equation for the inhibitor. I'm just going to show you what this type of noise does. And then the equation for U has this function, this piecewise linear function for the activator. Okay, let me show you how the nucleons look like. The nuclei look like this. This is the nuclei for U, and the line level 1 is the nuclei for V. So you see that the system is oscillatory. So we have tuned our system, our deterministic system, in such a way that the system is going to be oscillatory. Okay? But now I'm going to do the following. My question is, again, I'm going to use this theory, this very simple theory, to compute the systematic contribution of the multiplicative noise at first order in noise intensity. And this is what happens here. This is the contribution. You can plug this into here, and then you can compute the effective nuclines. And this is what happens as you increase noise. As you increase noise, the nucline shifts to the left, so that the crossing point goes past here, and once it goes to this branch, it becomes stable and the system becomes excitable. So this approximate theory is telling you that you are going to be able to induce a transition from an oscillatory regime to an excitable regime. But of course, we have a problem, and maybe you have already noticed, which is the following. I want to make a system which is oscillatory behave as if it was excitable. But I'm introducing noise continuously here, okay? I'm introducing noise through this B term. So, of course, how am I going to distinguish between the oscillatory, or how is the system really going to behave as an excitable system? Because this is how the system behaves in the absence of noise, a very good oscillatory system. Now, I'm telling you that effectively, locally, This is the point. Locally, the system is going to behave as if it was excitable. But you have noise exciting the system all the time. So how do you distinguish a limit cycle around this unstable fixed point in 1 from a simply noise-induced limit cycle when the system is in 2 or in 3? Okay, when the system is in 2, it will be excitable. But since you have noise continually exciting the system, you may have a noise-induced limit cycle. How do you distinguish this periodic limit cycle from a noise-induced limit cycle? It's not a matter of distinction, it's a matter of how the system behaves. As soon as you put there a coupling and noise, the system is not going to really behave as excitable. You're not going to calm it down. I want to calm it down. System in the guy is moving, and then I want to calm it down. I'm not going to be able to do this in a local system. That's the point. In a single cell. So here, and this is the relevant thing, I really need to have coupling. Okay? So now I really need to have coupling. Now I have.
Well, you did it for a single, presumably.
But if what if I have a single system.
This is the coupled system.
Yeah. I have to.
For the single system?
For the single system, what happens is that as you increase noise, and I should have put this, the corresponding figure here. And that's true. For the single system, what's going to happen is that as you introduce noise there, you will still have oscillations which will look more or less noisy. Because as noise increases, the system becomes more and more excitable, but you are exciting it more and more. So you are really seeing that you are exciting limit cycles, or you are exciting oscillations which are like limit cycles due to noise. So you're not able to distinguish. The system is not behaving as an excitable system. But as soon as you introduce coupling, and here that's why coupling is non-trivial, coupling is going to help them, is going to prevent a local neuron from escaping due to noise. So it's very similar. But somewhat similar to ergodicity breaking in noise-induced phase transition. This is my point. It's not the same thing, of course. But coupling is freezing the system, so the system really wants to be in this steady state. And even though there is noise, noise is not going to excite it because you have the neighbors who are going to keep it in the stable, in the fixed point, which is now stable. And this is what's really happening. This is a mean field. This is you. Well, this is not an error. Let me see. This is an error. Well, it's the same. No, it's the same. This is either the mean field or U for one single cell because all of them will be synchronized. Okay, so this is what happens of you. Yeah, because of the global coupling. The coupling is here is very strong. You could say, this is trivial because coupling. You will say it's unnecessary. And you see that as you increase the noise intensity, the system goes down to the stable state and stays there. And what my claim is, this is a stable. This is a excitable regime. Okay, I have here some simulations, but you are already very. I think I'm already quite over time, but let me show you. They're not very nice simulations anyway. This is a spatiotemporal behavior of the system in the absence of noise. So it's excitable. The coupling is very large, so it's always synchronized. Okay, very trivial. Now, let me add noise. If I add noise, oh my goodness, I have to stop this guy. I'm going to kill it. If I add noise, this is what happens. It stays, well, in this situation, it stays there. Of course, there are a little bit of movement because of the noise, but it's not escaping because of coupling. Coupling here is relevant. In the previous situation, coupling was not so relevant, but here it is really relevant. Okay. So now I'm telling you, this is a stable regime. How do I test this? How do I test this? My noise is not able to excite, but now I could add other sources of noise, or I could add other kinds of things. I could force the system. Let me show you why. Now I'm going to go very fast. Well, these are phase diagrams. I'm not going to enter in. You can compute the phase diagrams between oscillator and excitable situation. Here you really see that you need coupling in U. Coupling has to be large enough. It's not so large because it's multiplied by epsilon, but anyway. So if coupling is large enough, you have excitable regime. This is an analysis of how it depends on the diffusion coefficient of B, but I'm not going to enter into this because I don't have time. But here I'm going to present you, in order to convince you that that state you saw is real excitable system, I have to present you typical features of an excitable system. First feature, it exhibits a stochastic resonance. So if I perturb it harmonically and I introduce another source of noise, because this noise is not helping me, I have already seen it. So if I introduce this noise, an additive noise, and a harmonic perturbation, I observe a stochastic resonance. So this is what happens if I introduce, increase the intensity of the additive noise. So you see that for an optimal amount of noise, I have a better response of the system to the external perturbation. The external perturbation is not so large. Okay, this has been scaled just for convenience. It's a very small sinusoidal perturbation. And the system only responds to it for an optimal amount of noise, and this is coherent resonance.
I don't understand this.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This I'm going too fast.
These coupling terms.
These coupling terms. This is mean field again. This U bar is the average of U.
So you have to make it self-consistent.
This is your numerical simulations. So you can introduce global coupling in your numerical simulations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you need to make it self U bar.
So at every point in time, yeah. So you have coupling which extends not only to the nearest neighbors but to all of the system. At every point in time, you compute this. These are numerical simulations. Global coupling. First, this is one thing that I hope it will convince you. And I'm very sorry. I'm finishing. That this is excitable. The second thing is the following. Now I can also perturb it. What excitable media does? Excitable media propagates information. So this is, for instance, now I'm changing the coupling to local. Okay. And I'm going to, I changed the coupling to local, so now you see that you don't really need a global coupling. And if you have a couple of local coupling, it makes sense to talk about patterns, about spatial dimensions. And here, you see what happens as you have this local coupling, and then you perturb it in different ways. You can have either front propagation, or you can have spirals, depending on the initial conditions. This is just to make it nice. This is not relevant at all. Okay, so this is it. I'm sorry. I think the final conclusion should be that I hope I have shown you some of these models were really experimentally relevant. Some others were just, the last one was just a completely artificial model. But I wanted to show that really it's important when you have noise in the system to analyze the effect, because you may see things that make you think that the system is in some deterministic regime, and it's not. It's in a stochastically induced regime. And when you have the Fitzsimons-Nagumo model, and you try to, for instance, introduce your ion channel noises, I don't know where the ion channel noise is going. Well, Ron Fox made a very complicated calculation, and the noise enters in a very complicated way, terrible. So imagine if you have this terrible noise there with this simple noise, imagine these things, what things happen if you have a very complicated noise. So the picture is not as clear as usually people think. This is my last conclusion. I'm very sorry for going over time, and thank you very much again. Yes.
And everything would look very different if they were Edo.
I have several answers to this. The first answer is that, for instance, in the case of the, if you have a real external noise, a noise that you introduce into the system, as far as I know, a Sadovnikov interpretation is the adequate one. This is the first thing. So that's why there is a good agreement between our predictions and the Belousov-Sabotinsky results, for instance, which have been compared. I haven't shown it here, but have been compared rigorously, both of them. On the other hand, you could say, for instance, this is a very long debate. People were thinking again, and maybe this makes this simple equilibrium model a little bit more relevant, which is the following. People thought that you would never have noise-induced phase transitions, for instance, with Ito. Okay, but with this second mechanism of noise-induced phase transition I told you, which Professor Hohenberg said that it was more like an equilibrium system in steady state, you can have noise-induced phase transition in an Ito interpretation. So we want to...
So
it depends on, of course, it depends on how you introduce the noise into your system, of course, and there are times in which you need Ito. So we have found the noise-induced phase transition in the Ito interpretation in that equilibrium-like model. I haven't reported it here, but it exists. And this is important because people thought that you never have. People thought, this is always due to this shift. This shift I was telling you.
They're just the extra drift term.
Yeah, so you have the Sadovnikov shift, and this thing is going to shift the dynamics. And this is not true. I mean, these effects also exist in the Ito interpretation. Okay, at least.
No. Most of the effects you talk about don't.
Don't. Well, we have to. This is another thing. And there are no, for instance, in the particular case of excitable system, there are no works in this direction. So people have not investigated these kind of things. Of course, the mechanism will be different. But I'm saying it would be worth studying whether Ito noise or Ito interpretation would lead to order also in excitable systems. It would be a different mechanism. I agree.
When transparency showed that the effect of noise is to rescale a parameter.
Yes.
How general is this applied to any?
This is what we were saying. If you have a Sotonovic, if you interpret your noise in a Sotonovic sense, you will always have the systematic contribution, even the noise has zero mean. And you can always read it, so your effective model, you can define a deterministic effective model, which of course, if it has the right shape, you can it just leads to a redefinition of the parameters. Sometimes it's more than that, of course. But you can always write down a deterministic model which is approximate at first order in noise intensity, if you are in the Sadovnikov interpretation, okay?
Or you can think of it as an equation with a term which really does have zero.
Yeah, but you still have the fluctuations there. So, I mean, for instance, in the case of phase transitions, you always get a reentrant transition. If noise becomes very large, you get disorder again, because this approximation is only valid for small noise intensities.
I mean, you would want to explore how sensitive your results are to noise, because what you say is that noise in experiment, there's always a lot of noise,
mm-hmm.
and therefore it sort of justifies your procedure. But you picked, the question is how carefully you picked your noise,
mm-hmm.
both in where you put it and how much you put it.
Mm-hmm.
The other question that arises naturally is, what is the effect of possibly unwanted noise? How robust are the results with respect to noise? Because you don't always get to vote on where the noise appears. So have you, I mean, obviously there's no general answer to my question, but have you thought about that?
Well, for instance, according to the first question, let me see. Yeah, I have to. I have to.
Results you showed at the end, where you were able to manipulate by the noise.
Yeah.
The question is how.
That case.
Were those typical results?
No.
In quotes,
well,
or.
This. I mean, you have really to choose your f and your functions, your deterministic functions, and your noise
function. And if you put noise somewhere else, does everything sort of collapse?
So the first thing is the experimental results, as I told you, you can really control very well the noise because you are imposing it externally. And we usually discuss about external noise, okay? So you have a very good control of the noise. These are the experimental results, but they are basically behind the motivation of the theoretical analysis. But the motivation I gave you, for instance, at the end of the talk, saying that we don't even know where the ion channel noise is going to get into the system, this is just a very open question in the sense that you really need to. So if the noise is internal and is well defined, you don't know what's going to happen. But I mean, the only thing I want to tell you is that we have to keep our eyes open in this kind of issues, I think. Because a very simple multiplicative noise term is able to deduce to do all kinds of things. In a biological system, it's going to appear in a very simple model, it's going to appear everywhere. I mean, when I looked at Ron Fox's paper, they introduced this noise and it was terrible. I mean, it appeared everywhere in the Fitzgerald-Wumo equation.
Typically, in neurons, the ion channel classes are big enough that perhaps it's small against the
noise,
which adds the way you add it.
Yeah, but then you have, we shouldn't talk about ion channel, but then you have neurotransmitters all over the place, and you cannot assume that neurotransmitters are going to be there when you need them. The level of neurotransmitter is going to fluctuate in time, and where do these fluctuations get into the Fitzgerald-Wumo picture?
That you added, it's added, that goes into the equation for the U.
Okay.
Synaptic noise, additive noise.
Okay.
All that stuff.
Okay. Well, I don't know, maybe. Well,
if it goes in the gating variable.
Maybe we should, so maybe we should make a list of, I'm being very broad here, but one should make a list of all possible sources of noise that you have in a neural tissue, and then we see, well, this one doesn't count because it's additive, this one doesn't count because it's very small.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
Other questions, comments? Actually, one other question.
Yes.
You had this model, which was a sort of different nature, which had this different mechanism for making a noisy defect.
Yes.
And Pierre said, "Well, okay, that's just equilibrium." Hmm. Have you tried to cook up something which does not have Lyapunov functional, but has the same mechanism?
You mean he means phase the noise, the second mechanism of noise-induced phase transition. Well, what we have tried with that model is just looking at Ito. We have also looked at the dynamics. Okay, we have looked at dynamical critical exponents, and they happen also to be in the same equilibrium universality class. So they were not. This was not very exciting, but this is non-equilibrium part of the model, if you want. We looked at the Ito, we looked at dynamics, but we haven't looked at the.
Nothing would be simpler than to break fluctuations.
Well, we just began thinking about this problem because it was again a toy model in which you could really find the real free energy. But this was a nice model, academic example. But then we found all this stuff, and then we never went beyond that. So that's interesting, of course.
Can I offer a question?
Thank you.